And here I am again, seeking to find some way to express and communicate, not just to you, but to the world, how easy it is to be finished with misery and suffering in this life, right now, and in the finishing of misery and suffering, how really all the problems of the human race disappear. But my problem is not to find a way to impress upon you how wonderful life is, or how sweet it is, or how beautiful it is, or loving, or any of that stuff. Because that's easy, you know. There are poets that have done that. There are musicians and singers and songwriters that have done that. There are preachers that have done that and done it well. There are sutras and shastras and Upanishads and all kinds of spiritual utterance that have been devoted to persuading us or describing to us how wonderful life is, how wonderful existence is, how ubiquitous and universal is the bliss of being. So I don't even bother with that too much. I guess sometimes I slip into it, but that's not my purpose. That's not my work here. My purpose and my work is to find a way to communicate to you and to everyone who can hear how easy it is to be finished with the experience of misery and suffering. That's the only thing that prevents us from seeing for ourselves what a wonder existence is. And it's the easiness of it that's so difficult to convey. You see, we all of us, I imagine probably all of us here, have at some time in our life heard about the spiritual realm and how it offered a solution to our problems. Heard the descriptions, heard the spiritual utterances, and were taken by them. And embarked on some spiritual endeavor, some spiritual path, some spiritual practice, with the intent of, I guess, finding enlightenment or awakening or self-realization. But we seek these things, almost all of us, we seek these things with the underlying goal of curing the ills in our life. What I mean by that, we know what the problems are. We know what the mistakes and the misunderstandings are that plague us, our mind, our consciousness, our lives. We know really that within the life itself, if we could rid ourselves of hatred and resistance and animosity and judgment and all of those things, if we could find a way to have the desire to have the open-heartedness that accepts all present as our state in this life, if we could be finished with blaming our problems on others, if we could be finished with believing that we are going to find satisfaction by attaining wealth or fame or love, even if we could rid ourselves of the belief that we could find satisfaction by attaining anything, that then would be all right, that then we would be in the enlightened state, the awakened state, the realized state, and all our problems would be finished. So we enter the spiritual realm with the idea of curing the things that are wrong with us, of either by the thunderbolt of enlightenment, which wipes out all the negativity and the misunderstanding and the confusion and the contraction and the selfishness and the lust in one fell swoop, or by the patient training of the mind so that the things that are good in the mind, the things that are not harmful, the things that are welcoming and loving and open-hearted are encouraged, and the things that are contracted and selfish and desirous and hateful are washed away. That we would, in these lives then, be finished with misery and suffering. We would, in these lives then, be finished with the hatred and antagonism, the self-hatred and the greed that are the root of our trouble. And we work on these things with some degree of success or no degree of success, or sometimes it feels good, sometimes it doesn't feel good, sometimes we feel like we're doing right, sometimes we don't feel like we're doing right. But we're okay because we're on the right track, we're seeking enlightenment, we are seeking to cure the disease in our lives. We're seeking to cure the negativity in our lives. So we're on the right track. We may not get there this lifetime or this week or this month, but we're doing the right thing. And in the meantime, we continue with our yearning and our sense that we haven't quite got it, that we have some way to go, that we'll get it someday. And this, in my experience, is pretty much the state of the spiritual world. And the thing that I'm trying to point to, and I know I ramble on quite a bit, but the heart of the matter that I'm trying to get to is this belief that what we have to do is fix our lives, is fix our minds. And therefore, enlightenment or spiritual aspiration has as its utility the prospect that it will do just that. It will fix our lives, it'll fix our minds, it'll rid us of the negative and accentuate the positive and so forth, so that the quest for enlightenment, the quest for spiritual realization or spiritual fulfillment or whatever is a means to an end. And the means, the end that it is the means to is the reformation or transformation or transcendence of our lives, our minds, our desires, our hopes, our fears, our wrong-headedness, our right-headedness. And that's the problem, really. It certainly is true that spiritual practice, spiritual aspiration, spiritual work is a means to an end. Certainly, that certainly is the case. And it certainly is the case that what we seek and what we hope and expect to get from spiritual work is ending of misery and suffering, an ending of the internal warfare of my wanting this and not wanting that, and trying to get this and trying to get rid of that, which itself, writ large, is the story of humanity. All that's certainly true. But what we miss is, and what it's totally understandable that we would miss this, even though, of course, we've been told differently for thousands of years, what we miss is that the point has nothing to do with doing anything at all about the life, which we already know from our life experience, we seem to have almost nothing to say about anyway. I mean, thoughts come, thoughts go, desires come, desires go, antagonistic impulses come, they go, impulses to compassion and love come, they go. Quite beyond our intent or our desire. So the end that is the target of spiritual work, we misunderstand to be working on our lives, on our thoughts, on our minds, on our consciousness, and so forth. And therefore, when we engage in spiritual work, even the work of self-inquiry, the first place we look to see whether we're doing it right or whether we're on the right track is in our lives, in the way we think about things, and the kind of thoughts that come to us, and the desires that come to us. Is there less confusion or more confusion? Do I hate more or hate less? Am I a loving person? Am I an accepting person? Do I have a feeling of open-heartedness and generosity in this life? And if I don't, then I must be doing something wrong. I better try something else. The truth is so much simpler than that, that it is almost impossible to convey. The truth is that all of the stupidity in our minds and our lives is beside the point. We have nothing to do about it. There's nothing we can do to change it. There's nothing we can do to make it stay. There's nothing we can do to make it sweet instead of sour, or sour instead of sweet. These inclinations, these predispositions, they arise on their own. Thoughts themselves arise on their own. The experience of separation arises on its own. We can't do anything about any of it. And we ought to know that by now, since we've been trying so hard for so long. But even that, the idea that we ought to fix our lives, isn't a problem. None of it's a problem. None of it. Not a single thought, not a single desire, not a single moment of ignorance. None of that's a problem. None of it. The problem is that I believe myself to be this bundle of thoughts, desires, good things, bad things, good thoughts, bad thoughts, confusion, clarity, hatred, love, generosity, greed, all of which come and go, change places, dance as these lives, as these minds. And the problem is, and this I can't say enough, is that I believe myself to be that bundle of phenomena that is this life. So long as I believe myself to be this life, this mind, these thoughts, the good and the bad and the ugly, so long as I believe myself to be that, I am filled with misery and suffering and hopelessness. I am filled with the certainty that I am failing. I am driven by the anxiety and fear that is the engine of this entire bundle of thoughts and desires and actions and behaviors and aversions and attractions and so forth. Now, if that is the problem, then nothing that I try to do within this life, nothing I try to do to rearrange the thoughts or to make the good thoughts more prevalent and the bad thoughts less prevalent, the generosity more prevalent and the greed less prevalent and so forth, nothing that I do within this actually wondrous bundle of thought and feeling and desire, nothing that I do within it can possibly in any way even diminish the belief that I am it. Anything that I do within it to try to fix it as the solution can only feed and increase and intensify the belief that this is me, that I am at stake here, that I better get this right, that I better do this right. And it's that that's the source of the misery and suffering, this deep-seated, unexamined, unseen certainty that I am at stake here, that I better get this right, that I better do this right, that I better get rid of these bad things and hold on to these good things. So the simplicity of it is that instead of even trying to rid myself of the effort to fix the mind, even that is beside the point. So instead of trying to do anything or stop trying to do anything about the mind, about the life, about the behaviors, about the desires and the opinions and so forth, instead of all of that, what I really need to do is find out how to, if this is true, if it's really true that the problem is this false belief, then the only way that I can find out that it's true, and the only way is also the only way that I can do anything about it, which is to try to figure out how I can rid myself of this false idea, this idea that I am my life. And you see, now we've departed from the spiritual realm here. And we're in a different realm. We're in a realm that has to do with the desire to know the truth rather than the desire that the truth be, oh, I don't know, enlightenment or Buddha mind or emptiness. We've moved into a different realm, the desire to know the truth. Now, it's nothing new for us to be told that the problem is a false belief about what we are. What's new is for us to be told that the thing for us to do about that is to find out what I am in truth for myself, not to confirm some other person or some previous wise man's beautiful utterances about what I am, but to find out what I am really for myself. Now we're in the realm of wanting to know what's real, not wanting to be good, not wanting to be enlightened, but wanting to know what's real. And that's a lot simpler than becoming enlightened. That's a lot simpler than straightening out this life. The simplicity of it is contained within the the proposition itself. If the problem is a false belief about what I am, then the solution must be the truth of what I am, and the truth of what I am is always here, you see. It's never absent. I am never absent. All the things that happen, happen in me. All the things that arrive, arrive in me. All the good things, all the bad things, all the confusion, all the clarity, all the desire for clarity, all the love, all the greed, all the hatred. All of these things come and go and have their being in me, and I am here always. So it would seem that, just common sense would tell us that, if all that needs to happen is for me to see the truth of what I am, to be aware of the truth of what I am, then that's easy. Because I'm always here. And actually, the fact of the matter is, I am always aware of myself. There's never a moment when I am not aware of myself. So now we're in the realm of wanting to know the truth about what I am and seeing that that is present always. It's not hard. It's not far. It's not something new. It's me. It's this feeling of being me. Not the things that come and go in me. The good things or the bad things, the ego or the egolessness. Not those things. But just this kind of me-ness that's here always and that never changes. It's never absent and it never changes. One of the techniques for getting a glimpse, a taste of this reality of what I am is to look and see whether in no matter what is playing within the life, no matter whether it is the most magnificent and wondrous experiences of all or the most miserable experiences of all, no matter what is playing within this life, can I not see whether or not any of this touches me, affects me, changes me? In order to see that, I have to look at, well, me, myself. This background presence, this background reality that doesn't move, doesn't change, is unhurt and unhelped by any of the drama and the beauty and the horror of my mind, my secret desires, my pettiness, my generosity, my hatred, my love. And the only usefulness of anything that speaks of these matters, like I tell you that you are untouched and unchanged by any of the storm and horror of your life. And the only use of even suggesting that to you is to give you a clue as to where to look. Look to see what it is that's here that's not touched by it. Is that not you? Is that not always here? And the point of this is not to persuade you that you are always here, or even that you are untouched or uncontaminated by anything that happens within your life, but just to get you to look at yourself. Because that's really how simple it is. It doesn't take understanding it. It doesn't take being persuaded of it. It doesn't take having good experiences or bad experiences. It only takes looking at this reality as often as you can. As often as you can, whenever it occurs to you. Because this is really how simple it is. It's the looking that does the work. Period. End of story. It's the looking that does the work. So everything I do in these meetings, whether they're in this ethereal online experience, or together face to face, or on the phone, or by email, or in any case, the only thing that my work entirely, so far as I can see, is to try to persuade you, and by you I mean, well, the whole human race, individually, each of you, to look at yourself as often as you can. Because here's what I promise. I promise that if you will look at yourself just as often as it occurs to you to do so, don't worry about all the other stuff that's going on in your mind. Don't concern yourself with it. Don't even concern yourself with the fact that you're concerned about it. Just look at yourself. Look at what doesn't change. Look at what's here, always here. Look at what's never absent, what's ordinary, the same, as often as you can, as often as it occurs to you to do so. And my promise is that no matter what else is happening, no matter what you might think is happening or believe is happening, over time, this despicable lie that you are this life will be eaten away. And sooner or later, no matter how long it takes, it will be before you notice it. Sooner or later, it'll be gone. And with it will be gone the deep-seated anxiety and fear that is the product of the conviction that you are at stake in these things, that you're on the line here, that you got to get it right. And when that anxiety and fear and the idea that you're at stake is gone, so too will all the misery and suffering in your life. Not the pain and hardship, but the misery and suffering. And when that's gone, so too will be gone this internal warfare that is the source of all warfare, all murder, all hatred whatsoever in the world. So, this whole business is way too simple to be communicated simply. This whole business is way too easy to be believed. But this is self-inquiry, and it's not spiritual. And the goal is not enlightenment. The goal is not to wake up. The goal is not realization. The goal has nothing whatsoever to do with healing your mind. Nothing. The goal of self-inquiry is in the realm of the desire to know the truth. And as has been said, the truth will set you free. The truth will set you free of the false belief that you are your life, and bring to you the certainty that what you have been trying to see, you have always already been seeing. And what you have been trying to know, you have already always been knowing. Any questions?
We have Ernie calling from Massachusetts.
Hi, Ernie.
Oh, hi, John. I guess there's a question here somewhere, but it's more a report and maybe a sharing of my difficulty with self-inquiry and maybe even success with it. Because maybe people can relate to some of the difficulties that have arisen for me in terms of the mind complicating this whole thing, and I don't know, just as I do it, sometimes the mind would creep in and say, okay, I'm here, or I am, or I'm being, and then the word would flash across my mind, and all kinds of difficulty with this. And just last night, it was probably the first time in a long, long time where I truly rested, found an opening. I truly rested in being, I guess, and just stood there. And I know you've mentioned determination before, and I liked hearing that, because you have mentioned before that it is easy, and when I find it not easy, I sort of beat myself down as far as, you know, it should be easy, and it is easy. And when you said determination, it's something I enjoyed hearing, and it really helped me, because I guess it showed that you're gonna be met with a certain kind of resistance, and to turn away from it, or to just even accept it, which I've been doing lately, and as it comes, you just turn away and just, again, resting resting in that being. And like I said last night, as I was taking the medicine, I rested there, and it felt really good. And it was very simple. And I'm sure there's other people out there that have met with this kind of the mind complicating the whole thing, and you've always stated things so simply and clearly, and the podcasts do help a lot, just the listening to them over and over and over again, because I find every time I listen to them, there's something there, there's a new clue, or a new trigger that would say, yes, you know, it is simple. So little by little, it's becoming more uncomplicated and clearer. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that coming from somebody that's made this way too complicated, I think it's finally starting to, sink in or clear up. And I want to thank you for that. And thank you for maybe even talk a little bit more about the determination aspect of it, as you said, the intention behind it.
That's really excellent. I'm really happy to hear this report, Ernie. And you know, I think you're right. Maybe I don't talk enough about the degree of determination that's required here. And I think the reason I don't talk about it so much is because it's my experience that once you start on this, here's the deal. The fact is, so far as I can see, that all of our lives, everything we've been doing has been in service to trying to create an identity that I can be satisfied with, or to find something that I can call myself that I am satisfied with. In other words, it seems to me that all of our lives, what we're always doing and not realizing we're doing, and mostly I think because we're kind of dumbfounded at the prospect that we don't know what we are, but what we've been doing and not owning up to it or not realizing it has always been trying to find out what we are by means of trying to fit into some idea of what we should be. So that it's my experience that once one actually tries to find the truth of what we are, once that happens, there's no stopping it. No matter how difficult it can seem to be. And your experience is not so much different than mine. My experience when I was in prison and swimming in a sea of desperation and certainty of failure. My experience was that self-inquiry was a horrifying wrestling match that required that I, with all my heart, try to see what Ramana was talking about. Try to, you know, I knew I wasn't getting it. I knew that I wasn't seeing anything true because it didn't live up to my expectations, and it took me a long time of wrestling with the mind, of wrestling with whatever I imagine myself to be wrestling with. And it may require that. Maybe not for everybody, but certainly for me, and apparently for you. And all I can say is that this is what you really want. And once you see that this is what you really want, or at least that, you know, that it's really is the end of the line here. There's, if this fails, there's nowhere else to go. You know, when we're doing yoga or mantra meditation or any of the other things that we've done in our life to try to heal ourselves or to clear ourselves or to gain enlightenment or whatever, there's always the underlying certainty that, well, if this doesn't work, I'll try something else. If this teacher doesn't do it, I'll go to some other teacher. If this meditation method doesn't do it, I'll try some other meditation method. But really, this is the end of the line. If once you see that the only thing that can possibly do the work is to see the truth, then there's no other place to go after this. And it's the desperation that seeing produces that gives us the strength and the courage to keep wrestling, to keep trying. And it gives us the determination, because determination is a requirement, but determination is a gift, I think, of the discovery that this is the last resort. Maybe that's what I should start talking about it as, the last resort. I kind of like that.
That really does help hearing that, John. Because it just shows that there's somebody out there that struggled with it, which I know you have from listening to your past satsangs. And one of the miraculous things that I found as of late is that I'm doing the self-inquiry spontaneously. Instead of consciously thinking, okay, I should do it now or 10 minutes from now, it just sort of happens. It's strange. I find myself falling into it, like, you know, throughout the day, before bed, when I wake up, and it's such an incredibly, it's a really good feeling.
Yeah, that was my experience too. It took me by surprise too, and I speak about it from time to time, but it's very encouraging to me to hear these reports. I hear these reports of the arrival of spontaneity to the inquiry from many people, and it's very encouraging for me to hear these things, because that's my experience too. It really does kind of just. It's just your natural state is to look at yourself. So thank you for this, Ernie.
Oh, thank you, John. Thank you, John.
Anything more?
I'm not sure how I wound up here. I look back at my life, and I'm like, wow, I'm sitting here talking to John Sherman about self-inquiry. How did I wind up here? But it's all good. I'm thrilled, and I'm going to keep taking the medicine. And I hope what I said has helped somebody else, because when I hear other people's reports, they help me.
Yes, I'm sure it has. this is a wonderful report, and I'm sure it's helpful to people. And imagine how similar we are at wondering, how did I end up here?
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ernie. Thank you, Ernie.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have Birgit calling from Richmond, California.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Birgit.
John. I'm so happy that I can talk to you. I tried last time, but there were so many people talking, so I'm happy that I'm the second one today. And first, I want to thank you that I could find that what I always wanted.
Well, you're very welcome.
So, for me, it was I was looking on my life, and I didn't know for what. And I was running and running and looking. And I also was in the spiritual realm. And now I found out I have to unlearn everything I learned. And with self-inquiry, it became so easy. So at the beginning, it was a little bit effort. But now I always fall back to it. It is like automatic. There are no more other interests than being with myself and feel the inner peace. And this is so lovely. It is like nothing matters anymore. And whatever comes to me, it is so easy now.
This is very good news. You know, it's not always the case. I often think that I was a hard case, a poster boy for doing it the wrong way. And it's not always the case that it takes this wrestling match with yourself. It is sometimes, maybe even often, but not always. For some, it's very quick and very easy. And I am really in awe of these reports, that when it is obviously authentically easy, and the recognition that this is what I've wanted all along, which comes to us all eventually, comes so quickly, and I'm happy to hear this. This is good news.
Yes, but also I have friends which are also spiritual seekers, and I want to tell them, and they don't want to know. They don't believe me that it's that easy. So for me, it is like I want to share that like you do, and they don't want to know.
Well, that's okay. All we can do is reach as many people as we possibly can with this reality. And, you know, we never really know what the effect is. The immediate response of people really doesn't say much about what's really going to come of them having heard this report from you. You know, their mind is your mind. There's no two minds anywhere to be found. When you are speaking to them, you are speaking to yourself. And everything will turn out in the end. I promise that.
Okay, thank you, John.
You're very welcome, and thank you. You have been doing translations in German, right?
Yes, I have. Yes, with Tobias, he started it, and I did some, and maybe Tobias and I, we can work together.
That would be wonderful. Tobias is amazing, and thank you for your work in that.
You're welcome. Thank you for talking with me.
Now we have David calling from New York.
Hi, David. Well, David seems to be having technical problems, but David sent me an email the other day, which is quite beautiful, and which I understand he would like me to read to you, so I'm going to read it to you now. The subject of this email was, "Being what I am, I see that all the healing ever needed is now. Dear John, I wanted to express to you what has happened to me since we last spoke. In a moment of feeling intense love for someone I am grateful to, I experienced an opening up, as you call it. It opened up a window of acceptance of what I am. There was a spiritual experience, as there have been those experiences countless times before. But with this one came the intimate understanding that everyone that I know is already healed. That is, they are already whole and perfect and fully realized. And since that was true of them, it also apparently applied to me. This is where the peace you provided to us fell into place so perfectly. You told us that once the charges have been set to blow up a building, the building is already toast. It's actually been quite a while since I said that, but it's true. That piece explained what the dream represents in this healing. I saw that the healing of everyone in me flows from what they are right now, not sometime in the future. The charges of David's healing and everyone else's have already been set. Everything is already happening perfectly in the dream to ensure their and David's healing. David's apparent healing, the dream, can continue now with the apparent healing of those and even the world around David, and it need not concern me as I am. I say apparent, since the healing is present already. I saw that the dream of healing that we witness was just acting as a pointer. Once you see where it points, it can do what it does without disturbing you. And as you have shared with me, you can enjoy the precious gift of life as it is, while being what you are on a continuous basis. What I would tell others in the dream with me is that you are already healed. Once one sees intuitively that time is just a concept and that everything is happening in this moment, it is obvious that you are healed right now. There is nothing that needs to be done other than to accept it as you are. Those practices, if it comes to you to engage in practices, which David has, you will do those practices, but that need not delay your healing. If the practice helps you return to being what you are, do it. And if not, consider not doing it. It is a choice to delay your healing, whether conscious or subconscious. It is still a choice. Choose to be healed now. Be what you are and accept your healing in this moment, and it is yours. But your healing is your realization of what you have always been. I can see David doing things to share truth or whatever appears to be loving in the dream so others can be what they are sooner, but I can see it will not affect me. I also have experienced how mundane realization is, how easy if I had only allowed myself to see it before, but that's okay too. Thank you for this joy of being what I am, for the gift you and those who support and love you have been to David's consciousness. I am profoundly grateful. And that's the end of David's email. You know, the ways in which we express what we see are different for all of us. And the way in which David expresses this is different than the way I do. I don't speak of healing or any of that, and I never speak of being what you are, since there is, in fact, nothing you can do about it. You cannot not be what you are. But the piece in this email that is really sweet and indicates the authenticity of David's realization is when he speaks about the fact that you are already healed. When he speaks about the fact that you are already there. Because that's the truth. The work of the self of the inquiry has nothing to do with providing you with the seeing of what you are, really. It doesn't have anything to do with making you into something that's realized as opposed to something that's not realized, something that's healed as opposed to something that is caught in disease. The work of the self-inquiry is only to remove the false idea that you are not already everything you have, everything that you are, and that you do not already, as you sit here now, no matter what thoughts are going on in your mind, you already know all of this. You already know the truth. You already see the reality. But you can only know that when you rid yourself of this false idea that one of the components of which is the idea that you do not know this, that you are not realized. The central idea is that you are this suffering individual, struggling, wanting, needy person. You're not that, and you know it already. So, David, I see that you have lost your connection and then come back, and I don't know if you heard all of that, but I thank you from the bottom of my heart for your willingness to share with this that you have told me with everybody, and I'd be happy to speak with you about this. So be in touch with me, okay? David, can you speak? Okay. Maybe we can find another way to talk to each other. Who else?
Annie is calling from Australia.
Annie.
Oh, hi, John. Hi, John. How are you?
I am magnificently, wonderfully happy, Annie. And you?
Me too, John. I'm so deeply moved by David's email and everyone here. I've just been sitting here weeping, and I'm also feeling very nervous. But anyway, I wanted to talk about something that's been in my mind for a while now, this year, this whole thing of wrestling with the mind. And I just wanted to share with you my thoughts about that and like to hear what your opinion is. It'd be good to have a discussion. I'm sort of a bit nervous about talking about in this forum in front of so many people. I'd rather do it with you in person, but that's all right. So, I put myself in the same category as you, having been a very hard case, and a lot of wrestling with the mind. And I just wanted to say that, the work that I went off and did earlier on in the year, I found just so immensely helpful with it. And I still find it helpful. I don't find that it detracts from this inquiry with you, and I don't find that it contradicts. I actually found that it ended is ending the internal war within me with my experience, with my desires, with my thoughts and so on a lot faster, and has actually helped me to actually follow your simple directions a lot faster and more efficiently as well. And it's also in alignment with this desire to know what is true, just like looking at thoughts instead of like, see, what always used to be very hard for me was to this hearing from you and Nisargadatta and Ramana and all the other ones, these brilliant teachers, just turn away from the mind, just cease to identify, disregard, brush off, all these different terms. And to me, because my mind was so, I was so tormented by what was in my mind and there was so much chaos there, you know, that just sort of contributed to like a sense of schizophrenia in myself. Like I was trying to cut myself off from an aspect of myself. But I found that this other work that I was doing, that I still do kind of not in a formal way, but just as part of this inquiry, which is just looking at thoughts, whether they be, you know, like I want this, I don't want that, or thoughts about myself or other people, and asking myself, you know, is it true? Can I absolutely know it's true? And then this part of this other inquiry process, which was to just sit with, what am I without this thought? You know, so, and look, I get that, you know, I'm the same with or without the thought, but the actual question, what am I? It was like the sincere, honest desire to want to know that, that was just, without me even realizing it initially, that was actually like just taking the focus of my attention to the answer, you know, like, what am I? What am I? You know, and eventually without the thought dropped away and it's just, what am I? But if I hadn't had this inquiry, I think this inquiry has just made life a lot easier for me, so that I can turn my attention to just thinking it in this feeling of being. And I know that, like, for instance, if I hadn't had that inquiry recently, I would have probably quit this new job that I started, and a couple of weeks ago I went through a phase where I wanted to sever contact with my mother, and I also had this thought, like, I need to sever contact with my mother, and I just got enough experience with this inquiry now to know that, like, that would have been a dreadful to not follow that thought. And then, and you know, I worked my way through it and it passed, and I thought, holy shit, you know, if I had actually attached to that thought and believed it and followed it, I just would have, like, caused myself, which includes my mother, immense unnecessary suffering. And so I'm very grateful that I have that work. It's ending the war as well, and it doesn't take anything away from your instruction to look, don't worry about anything else, just, and you know, whenever you remember, as often as you can, turn your attention within, look to see what you are. It's just that whether I'm not hearing you correctly or what, but it's just, it's that part that I don't know, I just feel like I disagree with you in that area, and I still am doing what you tell me to do, but I just wanted to share with you, that's a very long and fast report, I just wanted to share with you what my own experience is there, and that's my direct experience, you know, that it's actually helped in the war with thoughts and desires and aversions and whatever, and helped with this, what you're saying as well. So thanks, John.
Well, Annie, this is the most remarkable report I think I have ever heard in all the time that I've been doing this. I suppose that what it indicates here is that I am not, just as I have suspected, I am not being very clear in what I am suggesting that you do, because all I am ever suggesting that you do is to find out what you are. Nothing else but that. And the question, what am I am endlessly putting to people. The fact is that I have no interest whatsoever in the purpose of the inquiry, and this really highlights how hard it is to speak about these matters, although you did it beautifully. The purpose of the inquiry is not to end the war. The purpose of the inquiry is not to replace all the other practices with some new practice. The purpose of the inquiry is not to do away with bad thoughts or to cause you to stop following thought or to have any effect on the mind whatsoever, nor is it to suggest to you that you disregard the activities of the mind. The purpose of the inquiry has nothing to do with the mind. The purpose of the inquiry is to find out what you are. And just as you said so beautifully and so simply, this desire to know the truth of what you are is the only true thing in our life. There is nothing else that's worth doing. So, if I have been unclear about this in the past, and please, everybody that's listening to Annie and I, please listen to this carefully. There is no thing that is more effective than raising with yourself the deep, honest, earnest question, what am I? That is the heart and soul of the inquiry. Everything that I ask you to do, I ask you to do in order that you can see what you are in truth, in reality. It has nothing to do with the mind. It has not, the mind is beside the point. It has nothing to do with stopping the mind, starting the mind, ending the war, continuing the war. These are all side effects. These are all consequences, and is not anything to do with the inquiry itself. What am I? That's the key. What am I? That's it. Okay, Annie?
You know, I hear you. I still think we're talking about something different though. There's something not, it's like something's not connecting or here between us in either what I'm hearing or what I'm saying or what you're saying. It's like there's just some discordance, although as I said before, it's not like, I don't know. I'm just going to assume that it's my misunderstanding, my lack of understanding, and I don't think that it, I even really need to understand in order to do this practice. So, it, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It's just that there's, I just wanted to say that, you know, it seems like, John, you didn't actually really address what I was saying, which is that about what to do with the mind. Like, okay, so there's this aspect of find out what you are no matter what. Just turn your attention to this feeling of being, this awareness that's always here. Make that the primary soul focus, and I'm totally agreed with that. And then, you know, like I'm just thinking about this example of I'm just saying that I don't, like without this other practice that I had of, that I have of inquiring into my thoughts and questioning the truth of my thoughts and desires and aversions and whatever, I think that I would be prolonging suffering in myself and causing myself and others suffering. And that seeing over and over the truth in the insight that no thought is true is something that has actually assisted the rate, the intent, the earnestness with which I then want to turn within. Does that make sense? Any more sense to you?
Yeah, sure, but just a second. I don't have any problem with any of that, Annie. I really don't suggest to anybody that anything they are doing, they need to stop doing. Nor do I suggest to anybody that the things that they are doing that seem to be helpful to them are not helpful to them. I think that everybody should keep doing whatever they can do to make it easier for them. I think that all the practices that people engage in are fine. I don't see any problem with any of them. I am not opposed to any of them. I hear your report that this particular practice has been helpful to you, and I believe you. I But the so that what I'm saying here is that the point of the inquiry that I teach and that I speak about is not to replace those practices, like the practices of looking to see what is true or if there's any truth to any thought. I don't ever encourage you to replace that practice with some new practice. I don't ever want to encourage you to stop doing any practice or to start doing any other practice apart from self-inquiry. So I think it's fine. I don't have any problem with it. I'm very happy if anything that you've found in your life has been useful to you to in any way at all. You follow me?
I think so. I think it's what I have heard you say repeatedly over and over, that nothing else works. Or maybe it's that I disagree with you about saying that it doesn't matter what you do in your life. Is that what you're saying? Because I'm like thinking about this example of my of this thought I had about my mother a couple of weeks ago, and that how I'm so glad that I didn't identify that thought and follow it out, and that sort of do you know what I mean?
What I'm saying is that it really is none of my business what happens within your mind and what practices that you find to be useful within your mind. I am absolutely supportive of anything you do within your mind that's helpful to you. I am not qualified to comment on practices such as the one you're speaking about because I have no experience with them. In the end, I know this, in the end, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anything you have said contradicts this, since what you have told me is that this practice has made it easier for you to do the inquiry. In the end, it all comes back to the question, what am I? In the end, the only thing that finally eliminates suffering in a life is the truth of what I am, not the truth or untruth of other things, but the truth of what I am. And I'm not qualified to comment on these practices except to say hallelujah if it's helpful to you. I mean that from my heart.
Yeah, okay. You know, I hear you. Like, we're totally in agreement there. And as I said, I just, even though I've had these what seem to be kind of, I don't know, like a feeling of just not agreeing with everything that you say, or just, you know, having issues, if you like, with some of the things that you say, I know that the heart of what you're saying is true, and and I've just known to just keep on, you know, following your simple directions. So anyway, I think the point is I just wanted to raise this thing because it's been like there in the back of my mind for about 9 months, and just talk it over with you. So that's great, and thank you very much for providing the space to do that. And I'm really good, John. I just want you to know I'm really good, and I'm really grateful, and thanks.
You're very welcome. And if anybody agrees with everything I say, they should immediately slap themselves, because there's much of what I say that just by the nature of being incarnate in a human mind is nonsense. But what's not nonsense is this. If you will see, not you in particular, Annie, but if you, myself, all of you, each instance of you, will see the reality, the actuality of what you are, everything else will be taken care of. So thank you, Annie. It's a pleasure, as always, to speak with you. Is there anybody else?
We have Maurizio calling from Italy.
Hi, John.
You have to do something about your speakers.
How's it going?
Very well.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Well, John, I just want to give you a little report. You know, I think that the so-called medicine is kind of really working for me. In the last few months, really, there has been much less pressure from all the previous thoughts that were really big problems in my life, in my personal life, and there is an amazing ease in that, and that really seems going together with a sense of spaciness that somewhat is also present more and more. Also, I think that very many things that were really apparently I would define as my problems sort of really start lifting up and lose weight. So this is, for this I am really thankful again. So I just wanted to let you know. I have a little question actually that maybe an intellectual question, I don't know, but I'd like you to tell something about the time factor in self-inquiry, because if the lie, as you say, is the belief that we are our life, it seems to me that also this idea that we were born and we will die as personal individual equals the time factor in our life would be part of this lie. But also I heard you speaking and talking about the fact that if we take the medicine in time, time will be a factor that will eradicate the lie. So I'm a little bit confused about what is the play of time in this. How do we deal with this? Thanks again, John. Thanks a lot.
Well, when I speak about the when I speak about the time that it takes in self-inquiry, I'm speaking about the fact that according to the predispositions of the individual entity, the individual personality, the individual bundle of predispositions and inclinations and habits and strategies and thought processes and so forth, according to the particulars of that, it takes more or less time doing the inquiry for the lie to become eradicated. And obviously the individual is a creature of time. In fact, it can exist only in time. It has no being outside of time. So in this play that is time and space, quite clearly, depending on the particulars of the individual entity, it takes a longer or shorter time. It takes more struggle or less struggle to continue the inquiry to its end. which is the eradication of the lie. We're seeing the discussions of that here in the satsangs today when we've spoken with Eugene, whose experience is more in more like my own, which is maybe he's not as bad as me, but somewhat like that, where it took some time and some effort and some determination to see results. With me, it took a very long time in the time span of this individual to see results. With Birgit, it took much less time. And that, all those things are, we don't have anything to say about that. That's just the way that the individual is constructed and put together and its predispositions and all of that. It seems to me that that's obvious and that's just a practical thing. When you talk about whether or not the time boundness of life as an individual is a component of the lie that I am the individual, well, of course it is. And that's goes without saying almost. But the idea that there can be some intellectual, intuitive understanding of the timelessness of reality within the time-bound individual is absurd. So that there's really nothing whatsoever that I can say about that that will be of any use or satisfaction to anybody. In exactly the same way, there's nothing whatever that I can say about the reality of what you are that will be satisfactory. Because the reality of what you are is nothing can be said about. Nothing. The mind in which things are said and understood and intuitively grasped itself appears and disappears within this actual reality of what you are. So how within this limited play can I possibly have anything to say about the limitlessness, the perfectly ordinary limitlessness of the reality of your nature, which also has, which is, just as you suspect, entirely free of time and its constraints. But that doesn't mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean what I think it means. It doesn't mean anything that I can say about it. You already know what it means. You already see the reality of this. You have never not seen, not been seeing the reality of this. So continue as you are with this wondrous inquiry, and all these things will be made clear. Not as you expect them. Not in a way that you'll ever be able to say anything about them. The sweetness of life is all that you can speak about. The nature of the life itself, which is time-bound, is all that you can speak about. And it's not you. Nothing can be said about you. Do you hear this?
Yes, John, this was extremely clear, extremely useful.
Excellent. Anything else?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Who's next? Anybody? Okay, then. I guess we're finished here. And this has been a a lot of fun, and I think useful. I hope useful. I hope that everything that we do in these meetings in some way serves the innate, inherent, unquenchable need to see the truth that you are. The innate need, the innate desire to see the truth is, well, innate. It is part of your nature. The awakening of that, that's what gets kind of awakened, is this innate wanting to see the truth. And the pointing it somewhat in the right direction to see what it is that we have always wanted to know the truth about, which is what we are. And as you have heard from the varying reports here today, and as you can see on our website, and as I hear constantly, this inquiry, this radical shift from the spiritual to the realm of wanting to know the truth, of wanting to know what's real, of bringing to bear our own natural intelligence to see what's real, of the willingness to get down in the mud and struggle and wrestle and try with all the determination you can muster to see, to be satisfied that you know what you are. This radical move away from the ethereal. We owe to Ramana. The possibilities, the radical possibilities presented to us in this utterly non-spiritual teaching, we owe to Ramana. And the incredible stroke of luck that came to him, which was not spiritual in nature. And his willingness and his determination to meet with us constantly, and no matter how we squirmed, and no matter how we fought to bring anyone who came to him back finally to the only question that matters, which is, what am I, really? For whom are these problems, really? So, I'm very happy to meet with you like this. I'm very happy and honored to be, as Eugene said, I have no idea how this came to be. It is a source of endless delight and surprise to me that I find myself in this this wondrous position, this wondrous relationship with you. Not Eugene, Ernie, I meant Ernie. So thank you for this satsang. Thank you for this time together. Thank you for your attention. Thank you for your determination. Thank you for your willingness. Thank you for wrestling with me. Thank you for everything, everything, everything. Please keep me up to date on what's happening with you. Write to me or see me in person, or just keep me up to date with what's happening to you. I don't want to know when the next meeting is, but Carla will speak to you for a moment when I'm done, and she doubtless knows when the next meeting is. I love you all. Thank you so much for this time together. Om Shanti.